Unique Empathy. She's the author of Buxton Spice and Tide Runners, I'm sure most of you here know. Both books were nominated for the International Impact Dublin Literary Award. She was named a great talent for the 21st century by the Orange Prize judges, and in 2001 won the Casa de las Americas Prize. Brought up in Guyana, she now lives in Grenada, and currently she's a writer in residence at the University of Iowa as part of their International Writers Program. And I'm going to hand her over to you so she can.
Thank you, Mike, and thanks to the Caribbean Studies Center for having me and inviting me here. As a non-academic, it's sort of quite an experience, but I've really enjoyed it so far. And thank you all for coming tonight, too. I'm reading from a new work of mine. I've been trying not to write for the last 10 years, so it's been a long gap since I last published anything. And it's a big struggle, sort of like a lot of conflict in writing and living in the Caribbean, choosing to remain in the Caribbean for me. So this is a book set in Trinidad called All Decent Animals. And I use the city Port of Spain and it's based maybe on my relationship with Port of Spain instead of love-hate with Trinidad, which many Trinidadians have this relationship with Trinidad too. And the main character in the novel is an architect, and he struggles with the same sort of conflict himself, with his sexuality, and he's dying of HIV. Lynn nicely chose a very dense part of the book, so bear with me, please. As I try to sort of put it into perspective, and Carnival plays a big part in it as well. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, bram, bram, bram. The rhythm section set off 300 steel drums shaking and glittering panorama night alive. Silver metallic notes clutter and hustle the crowd. Herds of wheeled van frames, thousands of feet and hands pushing down the street corral to the Savannah stage. Panorama Finals is the biggest, the excitest, mixest set of people in action. More important than Carnival Monday or Tuesday itself. This is the people's spine of the Bacchanal. Atta and Pierre had met Vernon, Fraser, and Alan among the parked cars. Helen and the others were arriving too. They stepped from the red glow of dust and parking lights into the stream of people flowing to the little food stores and closing the corral. Fraser's gait is loose, awkward, with a shrinking size, his long arms flapping at his sides. Alan bumbles along close by, broader now than his friend. Alan is his friend from England, and Fraser is the main character. He almost stumbles forward to touch and feel Trinidad again. A small group of friends fall in with a chipping boodum bam bam, boodum bam bam. Renegades, Catelli All-Stars, and Phase 2 Pan Groove, the big bands rehearsing in the queue. Despers, the strongest from Wajan Laventil, holds a legacy tuned and tight, pinging and pounding traditions high on their hill all night. The oil drum segments crawl like a massive centipede, electric, black, and shiny. Ripples of legs floated forward. Adrenaline anticipates the bite, hair raising. Atta, Fraser, and Alan push up between the canopied frames of Despers, inching closer to the rhythm section. Rum and heat stoke this engine of men and old steel. Car rims and angled iron, metal rod drumsticks in gnarled hands wait. Sweat drips from crow's feet, pour salt drops into their drinks, and they tap in. The happiest, sweetest startup count. Alan pretends he's carried away, but is here to see his friend in his home element for the last time. There will be no other time like this. Not at the rate he's losing weight. He secretly watches Fraser gripping the pole close to the Iron Man, bobbing in time with everyone pressed close, stamping the herald in beat. Tenapans join in lightly, then the mass of chafing drums crash into action. The onslaught of nerve time rhythm always made Alan marvel at the perfect synchronicity and the power of this music, played without a written score. The conviction of a self-furnished orchestra tied two rubber tips on steel. He had tried to capture all of this in photos and paintings. A young girl's braids lashing like whips as she snaps between six drums. Three boys bouncing in unison, heads back and hands flying identically. Old Rasta bending, crimping himself over his pan, squeezing it out. A Chinese woman paid back and solemnly rule in a vase. This was the kind of richness Alan Hugh Fraser missed when he had been in England. A mixed up crashing sound in his heart. It travels now from his grip on the wheel, through his weakening bones, jarring his very core. They didn't stay to see Despers onto the stage. 2 hours was plenty and the crowds wrapped up down there. From a distance, they had seen the blue and red of Catelli All-Stars clawing wildly and raising the head of Centipede to the floodlit sky. Sammy was coming round at Queen's Park Saban when he could hear nor stand roar. His boys in there making himself hoarse with the whistles and thing. The old fellas always on one side and the football fellas with one or two of the girls down below closer to the stage. They go have their coolers and drinks and a pot of pilau. He uses to bring goat roti to start them off because they're in there since early o'clock. This is the part now when the soloists bring down the volume. Reining everybody listening tight. People pressing on one ears, closing the eyes, catching the scale. And that master climbing higher, higher heights. Up, up, everybody standing, jumping, pitching screams as the rest of the band bust loose, crescendoing his skill. Sam swinging to the parking lot with a flourish in time. Alan would take Fraser home and Atta was ready to go to the mass camp. They waited with her for Sammy. In the safety of car lights on the edge of the old horse racing track. Be careful, please. Pierre held Atta close as he kissed her. I wouldn't be able to sleep at home anyway. And you think I will? He closed Sammy's car door after her. I go take care, she, don't worry, Sam said. Pierre glanced out at the dark, raping and mugging center of the park. I go safeguard, she, Sam repeated. As they drove off, and Atta looked back at Pierre. Fraser sat in the jeep and asked Alan not to start the engine for a moment. I'm okay. He exhaled hard, realizing he was unconsciously holding his breath with the startup of the next band in the background. He sat still shaking inside, and Alan lit up a silk cut mild. Give me one of those, please. His friend hesitates for a second. Then hands in the pack. You said please. Fraser drags gratefully on the long filter. He groans, releasing the smoke, and again before taking the next pull. Fucking Christ, don't start up that again. I groan whenever I like now. I'm allowed, and besides, it's supposed to be therapeutic. Jesus. A couple had walked up to the car opposite them, deep in argument. Instead of getting in, the woman went over and chopped the man on the chest, cussing his nasty backside. She kept flicking her wrist back onto her thick waist, punctuating. The lights of the cars on the road behind flashed between them like a music video set. These mild ones are too mild, Fraser complained, sucking hard on the filter and dragging air through his teeth like it's weed. My gesture to doctor's orders for my cough, Alan draws. 2 policewomen strolled past on the pavement, noticing but ignoring the lover's fight. You bitch! The woman screams and pushes the man back against the car. You fuck she, you lying fucking bitch! She hits the car and the man stiffens and grabs her face. We better get going, Alan, let's go. Alan turns on the headlights, but that only makes the man bellow at them. As they hustle out of the car park, Fraser tries to at least inform the officers. We know, they say. We see them. It's a lover's thing now. Fraser starts questioning them, but Alan drives off. I thought living here, you'd know by now and you're wasting your time. At the mass camp, instead of a hive of activity to complete the unfinished costumes, there were only a few people working on the queen costume. What happened to everybody? After the demands of the dog-tired manager. As usual, they can't miss the finals and then they never come back. So I say they'll be here. I took a taxi to come here. The old wirebender moves his little transistor closer to him on the bench and continues wrapping the elaborate headpiece. The table where Atta was supposed to join the team is loaded and waiting. She She snatches up the stupid cut-out gold shapes and starts stapling them onto the legs of white sailor pants. The piles on the table were just the start. Bags of pants for the entire section were under the tabletop too. 10 workers. 10 workers, you know, not volunteers, supposed to see this through. This is what drove the supervisor firator away. And if she can't take it, who's Atta? Or any newcomer for that matter? Atta looks over at the manager, fussing around the freestanding queen costume. The artist returnee girl, her foreign friend, and 2 British designers, friends of God of Design who came every year, were the only ones working on the thing. This year, there will be no theatrical performance preceding the band. What a ting, one of the performer's favorite words. The queen herself was out of words to threaten everybody with. She had gone to the semi-final stage with a costume she knew wasn't near done. But the waiting fans and judges didn't have a clue. When she swept up there with her bare white wings and long, long dress, head tie instead of headpiece, amen resounded, as if people were in a church. Queen rippled and soaked in the praise with the soft rhythm of the song, until every bit of vexed blood flew out of the very tips of her sails. She became pure and shining and beamed that angel form at them with her biggest smile. Waltzed off easy into the finals tomorrow, Dimash Grava, the Kings and Queens and Calypso Monarch competition, the beginning of the end of this mass camp life. The plain-looking artist girl pulls out one of the feather wings from the frame, lays it on the long table, and considers it carefully. The manager comes up behind her and stares at it hard. He and the girl keep glancing nervously at the small sketch on the wall. Then in a flurry, the girl opens a set of wings. She splatters plain water onto the wing, and others move closer to the table now. Gently, zenly, she picks up a brush, dips it in red, and touches the fabric. The one paint stroke spreads quickly through watery threads, running red edges into palest pink. The girl is poised again like a praying mantis, a god horse. She reaches out and places a spot of yellow, violet, tangerine. Atta goes over to look closer as the colors seep into each other. They form paintings of their own, the colors. Another wing is laid down for her and another. The girl wets them and studies them, then touches a particular spot. The paintings lift slowly off the walls of a gallery in London, New York, begonias close up and irises. Georgia O'Keeffe curling up to high, cool ceilings, soothing at her. She inhales the still timeless air and sits for a moment in that room, in Tate Modern, opposite the painting. Noiseless, pale, and scentless pink strangers pass circuitously, pausing to pray or feed on each image, stations of an invisible cross. The transparent people look through the ghost of Atta, and she is glad for that. Alone, alone, she enters the artist flowers, and palmer-flecked English and blue French fields, slash bodies, nightmare portraits, or a line, a streak of contemporary freedom. This girl painting here had gone through scholarship training of the best, submersed in cold weather kingdoms for years. There she was among select international students, and teachers like God of Design. In that strange creativity of warp time, these artists grew inside-out things and ways to show for it. As I had tried to appreciate the white skinhead girls playing naked, twisting up and contorting themselves on a silent stage, sometimes in a sheet. They skinned up their faces, stretched out pierced tongues at people, and kept doing alien sign language for bowel movement over and over again. When that didn't work, they tried to fling off their heads or get rid of their own arms. The music or noises they chose for performances, which willing people like Atta paid good pounds to attend, was even more curious. A twang here, a holler there, recycled garbage as instruments, borrowed ethnic recordings, and sometimes a real person from Borneo, the Amazon, Hutsu tribe, some equally underused effect. The thing I've noticed is that this honing and training of creativity had become the art of these spaces. The products that came out of these unique fiefdoms were the artists, and scholars for that matter too. Institutional, intellectual, and creative industries. What about such schools in a place like Cuba? How does the third world choose what to use from the first world? Or are the means of study so adopted that there's no choice anyway? Writers, poets, scholarships, still going out. Atawatches and morpho butterflies, the delicate pui, hearts of bromeliads, and hummingbirds slide together as they appear from the trained skinny hand of the god horse. When she crawled into bed next to Pierre that night, as it was getting light, she kept some of the quiet paintings in her chest. She covered them up in the sheets and stuck some of the large petals under her pillow. She would need them soon enough, when Pierre was gone to the North Coast. She would need them to carry her through the Dingwalli. She found it helps to bring something like the undersides of island hills into herself when she couldn't see them. Armpits, caves full of vulnerable tongue. He must go, it must come, sleep, strength. Fraser turned in Alan's arms and the nurses changed shifts discreetly. The two young nurses had come together this early. They made suitable noises outside the bedroom, prepping to enter for his morning ritual. As Fraser let them in with a grunt, they did their best not to look directly at Alan. One nurse touches Fraser's arm with warm fingers before putting on her gloves. The other whispers, "Morning, it's time." He groans. A small objecting noise, but rolls flat onto his back and whispers in return, "Morning," without opening his eyes. Dark could be day, dialysis filters light into night. Alan stirs, opens his eyes and sees latex hands, swabbing metal and stomach skin. He rises and goes out onto the veranda and lights up, still in the rumpled clothes he had arrived in. Fraser listens to Alan's racking cough and catches a whiff of his drying smoke. He breathes in deeply and the two nurses fill in better, together. The four-handed caregiver is connecting, hooking and smoothing. Cool, the chilling fluids flowing, turning dark into day, clear as a glass night, vanishing dreams and floating memories. The detail of a mock tail, feather, star sharp. Fan and spread a light in the dark, all things pure and beautiful, uplifting. Make a joyful noise for heaven, queen of the band, amen. The MC's ringmaster voice echoes her up into the thundering arena. He doesn't need to point and raise the audience to their feet. As the colored tips of her wings ramp into the sky, people clamor like children at a circus pushing to peep. And now the sparkle waving children sigh as heaven billows before them. They stay still, sticky faces and eyes glued, as a field of flowers on wings floats their candy floss hearts up into the cooling sky. Atta and the Slingerite artist creep apace alongside the stage. Some people sing for moments or stop mid-clap to sail with heaven. Freedom flighting in the night, into the night, in her arms, his arms, fan and spread. Souls flutter petals taller, tail of a kite in the clouds tall, fall. Womb shrinking, ovation, heart shaking, elation, dilation, dialyzing river, coursing past organs, washing poison bones and riverbed clear. Jab jab devils, crawling out from homes, from ghetto holes and inky air, gather on street corners with biscuit tins. Mothers wake their young ones, teenagers out already and drunk, armed with black oil and whistles. Juve morning is here. The bands of vagabonds, pagans, and cursed are gathering at 4 a.m. They laugh loud and share bottles of spirits. Liquor fires voices, and the last few asleep wake and stare. Independence Square is the deadly magnet pulling trucks and the hordes of devils. Mud, cocoa, paint-covered bodies, and lost souls. Jab molasses, crude oil rhythm, a guttural primal scream is building. Coming from pavement cracks, the bellies of rats, the white run spittle of the madwoman, from the city itself and its demons. Thank you.